You're listening to the Tan Talk Radio Network.
You remember them? The Yardbirds? A little bit of the Yardbirds. Part of the British invasion back in the 60s. Welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. Some people think that we're kind of locked in the past here, but we enjoy playing old music like that. We call it old now. Can you believe it's been 50 years?
It's only 50 years ago.
It's half a century ago. I mean, it seems to
really
some of us older people that it's not half a century. That we don't want to hear that word. It doesn't seem that long ago, really.
You know, all that stuff is still sounds fresh.
Yeah.
I think.
That's my colleague Lee Clark there. He's battling a little bit of a frog this morning.
Yeah.
But he's a Yardbirds expert. And we get together and figure out what group we're going to play or, you know, individual for a little what we call billboarding during the show.
Yeah, I suggest something and I veto that.
And he'll veto it
or if he
laughs so hard that he falls off the chair, then we go to another consideration.
I mean, we could have a like call in to vote for Liberace versus Yardbird. I mean, because
I did
Monday
mention
Liberace
one day. Yeah,
suggested,
I did.
And
but I also suggested Yardbirds.
You did, which I got.
Which you know, I try to balance it.
Yeah.
And we did Connie Francis, and you like Connie a lot. I do, too, and we did her.
She's still alive.
And she's very much alive.
There's still a possibility that her and I could hook up.
You could still meet her. You could still do that
she's
thing.
She's all Botoxed out, though. Too much Botox.
Most of them.
It's too bad.
It really is. Anyway, welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show, Tampa Bay's libertarian radio voice. I am Paul Molloy. It is Wednesday, June the 4th. Thank you for joining us. We're going to be talking in a few minutes with Carla Howell. Carla is the political director of the National Libertarian Party in Washington, D.C. There is a Liberation Party, but I think it's quite opposite the one I'm thinking of.
What, are you like Patty Hearst on Friday or what? National Liberation Front.
You know, Patty is Patty
still... worn my beret today.
Patty was with the Symbionese National Liberation Army. That was actually what came to mind when I said this. But not Carla. Carla was never part of the Symbionese National Liberation
Front.
Do they
still even exist?
I
think they disbanded when Patty went public.
Yes.
That was it.
Yeah, good old Patty.
Symbionese
I wonder what she's doing
Liberation
today.
Army. Patty Hearst?
Yeah.
Probably counting
her money.
Counting coupons or whatever.
Oh,
cutting
golly.
Coupons.
Yeah, Patty Hearst,
coupons?
Filthy rich.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Poor little rich girl.
Carla Howell is the political director of the Libertarian Party in Washington. And we're going to be talking with Carla about the party's upcoming national convention, which will be in Columbus, Ohio, in about a month. And we're also going to get the party's take on President Obama's latest foreign policy statement, his speech at West Point. Also, is America running out of doctors? Well, it may be that it is, and we're going to discuss it. And in our Freedom Works Ultimate Top 10 list, my friends, this may be the most interesting one we ever did. The top 10 jobs chosen by psychopaths. Yeah. And needless to say, if you know Lee Clark and myself, you're going to consider our career in the mix. Anyway, you'll enjoy that. Freedom Works, we come to you Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time, here on the great Tan Talk Radio Network in Tampa Bay, Florida. We are here to promote libertarian ideas. Our motto here, the more freedom you have, the happier, the more content, the more fulfilled, the more productive, all the good things. And you were promised this in our founding documents. Yes, the Declaration of Independence, which wanted to break away from King George at the time, wanted to establish the concept of individual liberty. And quite frankly, all of those guys that were setting up our government at that time were pretty much libertarians. And that's why we ended up with the Constitution. And the Constitution is a map, really, towards your individual freedom. So that's why we do the show. We're glad you're with us. We'd love to have your thoughts. You can call in on our toll-free line, 866-826-1340, 866-826-1340. You can also access our website, thefreedomworks.com, thefreedomworks.com. Find out more about us. Also, our shows are podcast there by Lee Clark. And so please go there, and if you'd like to hear one of our earlier programs, you'll also get a chance to see who our guest was that day. So, thefreedomworks.com. And as I say, in a few minutes, Carla Howell will join us. The Heritage Foundation's Daniel Cochus wrote an article recently about President Obama's West Point speech. Remember that? A little while back, he spoke to graduates of West Point. He was supposed to highlight the success, I guess you could say, of the administration's foreign policy and to lay out a vision of our engagement for the remainder of his term. Well, we'll talk with Carla and see what the Libertarian Party has to say about that, as well as find out about their national convention, which is only about a month away. I believe it'll be held in Columbus, Ohio, so we'll get the latest scoop on that. Well, teen unemployment is a huge, huge issue these days. And here, with the summer starting, in major U.S. cities, it is very depressing. A new analysis by the Employment Policy Institute shows that unemployment among teenagers without high school diplomas is more than 50% in two of the largest U.S. cities. Now, using Census Bureau data from May 2013 to April 2014, the analysis shows that, for instance, in the Riverside-San Bernardino area of Southern California, the unemployment rate for teens between 16 and 19 who do not have a degree in high school is 54%. In the Portland area, in their metro area, it's 54% as well. Now, there was also a look at the top 15 cities with the highest unemployment rate for teens, and it's well above the national average of 22%. Here they are. The top 15 are the Philadelphia area, 33%, the Chicago area, also at 33%. Pittsburgh's at 33%. Sacramento, 32%. Baltimore and Tampa, St. Pete, where we're broadcasting from, they're both around 31% teen unemployment. 31%. Now, that is an awfully high number. And a lot of people are worried, not just teens, of course, about where we're going. And is the recession really over? Anyway, we're going to take our break. And when we come back, Carla Howell will join us. We'll talk a little bit about the Libertarian Party.
This is the Rays Report.
Rays wrapping up an eight-game road trip. It did not go well at all. The Rays found a new way to lose their eighth straight. It came this way.
Runners will be going on this 3-2 pitch with the bases loaded. Here it is. Just outside, ball four, and the Marlins have taken a 1-0 lead.
A bases loaded walk, the only run of the game. The Rays out hit the Marlins in this one, 8-5, but couldn't come up with a big hit when they needed to, and they also couldn't play small ball well.
Double play in order, and you just don't want Molina to hit the ball on the ground here against the ground ball pitcher in Alvarez. He shows bunt, bunts it back to the mound. Alvarez is going to throw to second one. Echeverria back to first, and they get the double play. My goodness.
And the Rays now host the Marlins tonight with David Price on the Hill, airtime of the Rays Baseball Network at 6:30. With the Rays Report, I'm Neil Solmans.
Catch the Rays all season on the Rays Baseball Network. For tickets, visit RaysBaseball.com.
You're listening to the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back. Freedom Works. I am Paul Malloy, and we're joined by Carla Howell. Carla is the political director of the National Libertarian Party in Washington, D.C. We've had Carla on before, and it's always a pleasure to have you, Carla. We wanted to talk with you. First of all, I know the Libertarian Party's convention is coming up, and I guess it'll be held, what, in about 4 weeks?
It runs June 26th through June 29th in Columbus, Ohio.
Great. And how is it going so far? In other words, everything kind of set up and ready to go, and maybe we can talk a little bit about what will be on the agenda at the convention.
We are well prepared. Of course, there's a lot to do in the next 3 weeks heading into the convention, but we're expecting a great turnout. It's going to be a Libertarian National Party convention, a unique event. Unlike Democratic and Republican conventions, they're not rigged. They're not predetermined. Our elections are open. They often happen from the floor, as they did 2 years ago when we elected our chair. So it's always very exciting, dramatic, and we have a full track of speakers talking on a variety of subjects. We have a training session for candidates and activists the day before the convention starts on the day of the 26th. The actual opening reception is the evening of the 26th. So it's going to be fantastic. Every Libertarian convention I've ever been to is a memorable experience. There's all kind of parties going on, interesting people, interesting activists, candidates, elected Libertarians, and office holders, you know, running for office or for re-election. So it's unlike anything you can find anywhere on earth.
Yes, and in fact, you made a good point. They are spontaneous, and as opposed to the Democrats and the Republicans, it used to be that you would go to those conventions and they would actually figure out who was going to be their candidate. That is no longer the case. But at the as you say, at the Libertarian National Convention, when you go in there, you really are going in there with a purpose, right?
We are, and you never know what's going to happen.
Yes, exactly. So I see that you're going to have, is it Camille Foster? He is a host of a show called The Independence. Is that right?
That's right. Camille Foster.
Camille, I'm sorry.
Yep. Very interesting guy, very bright guy, very nice guy. Met him at some functions here in D.C., and he will be our headline speaker at the Saturday evening banquet. We will also have Lawrence Reed from FEE speaking as one of our keynote speakers, and a variety of other speakers talking about education, health care, gun rights, your right to keep and bear arms, taxes, cutting them, that is, dramatically cutting
right,
them,
right.
That is, dramatically cutting government spending, balancing the budget. All the key topics, and of course, many of these pertain to jobs, young people, their backbreaking student loans, their dim view of their career and their job prospects that many of them are suffering from while they're paying off their school loans. We're going to be hitting on the real key issues and the real solutions to those problems. Democrats and Republicans will give a lot of lip service to jobs. They like to pretend that taxing us more and spending more money somehow creates jobs, and when in fact it kills jobs. We're going to be talking about real job growth by freeing the private sector, allowing entrepreneurs and small business people to create jobs by getting government out of the way. We're going to be talking about a lot of interesting things: non-interventionist foreign policy, peace, bringing our troops home, closing unnecessary bases, and really shrinking the federal government. You know, it's funny to live here in D.C. There's a lot of great people in this area, but it is, of course, the big government capital of the world, and it's such a wealthy area. The top 10 wealthiest counties in this country, the majority of them are located in and around Washington, D.C. because there's so much money here that they're sucking out of the rest of the country. It's sad. It's really very sad. And the Libertarian Party wants to end this. We want people to keep the money that they earn. We want Washington, D.C. and the federal government to be so small, they put it on a milk carton. Let's talk about how big the federal government really needs to be, a fraction of its current size. A military defense, not a military offense, a patent office, a judicial system, a few core functions of government. The rest should not exist. They should be the sole purview of the state and local governments, and we need to dramatically shrink the functions in this town. It's a beautiful town. I'm sure they can find many other productive private sector things to do with this beautiful town other than take money from people all over America and spend it on lobbyists and special interests and pork barrel interests.
Well, I mean, you are absolutely right to our way of thinking here. And it's amazing that we've gotten so far away from what the real purpose of the federal government was to be. You guys are going to have so many issues. I mean, it seems to me, maybe now more than ever before, that the Libertarian Party and what it stands for is really important. Do you feel that way? Do you feel that for some reason now there is even more of a need for a libertarian philosophy of our government?
Absolutely. I mean, it's always important. Freedom, small government is the way things should be at all times. But it's particularly important now because government has gotten so big. Heading for $3.9 trillion spent every year for the federal government alone, another $3 billion or so for state or local governments. They're chewing up half of the economy just with direct spending. They mandate a lot of other spending through rules and regulations on both on businesses and individuals. So the government, state, federal, local commands and controls a majority of the economy in this country, and that's a very dangerous thing. It causes our prosperity to go down, down, down. It moves more and more people from the middle class to the working class to the poor. And this is the impact of big government. It doesn't work. And luckily, the American people are with us. The task before us is convincing them to vote libertarian and to vote small government, because as long as we keep stuck voting for Democrats and Republicans, no matter what the rationale might be, all it does is make things worse. All it does is give them license to keep taxing and spending and regulating the businesses and the people of our country. And it doesn't work. The only way we can change this is to break this chain of dependence, reject the arguments of one guy's less evil than the other guy. They're both evil. They're both doing damage. And if you vote for either one of them, you're telling them, keep doing what you're doing. Keep taxing us. Keep regulating us. Keep spending into oblivion with unbalanced budgets for years and years to come, which is completely and utterly unsustainable. The way we break the chain is by voting libertarian, voting small government, and demanding that our candidates be ones who are there not for a career, not for the ego trip, not to get in bed with special interests and create this revolving door between whatever special interest in government that they are behind. We need people of character, of integrity, of conviction, who say this is wrong. We need to shrink government. I'm there to shrink it. That's the only reason I'm running for office, is to shrink government. This is what our libertarian candidates are. We have 40 federal candidates who have taken a pledge that if elected, they will sponsor legislation to end the federal income tax, balance the budget, replace it with no other tax, just cutting spending and moving trillions of dollars, literally, out of the government sector and into the private sector, which will create more jobs than we have people for. It'll be just a cornucopia of jobs and opportunity. This is what our candidates are about. They're serious about changing the way government works in America, the size, scope, and authority of government, and shrinking it to a very small size.
We're talking with Carla Howell, and as you can see, she's very eloquent. She is the political director of the National Libertarian Party. And Carla, if I might, I want to slide over to President Obama's latest I guess you could call it a speech on his foreign policy. He made it at West Point, and it's been much discussed. There seems to be a lot of contention about what he had to say, and I wanted to get the Libertarian Party perspective on it. Here are just a couple of the things that were possibly touched on by the president. Maybe we can go back and focus on them. One of them being that President Obama did seem to imply that we've, as a country, have rarely been stronger than we are now relative to the rest of the world. And that our ability to shape the opinion of the world has helped to isolate countries like Russia. And that there is a very real chance we will achieve a breakthrough agreement on Iran. And he even touched on what was going on in the affairs with China, some of the trouble that's going on in the South China Sea and with Taiwan and those kinds of things. So having said all of that, does the Libertarian Party have a particular stance on what you might call the Obama doctrine?
Well, the Obama
doctrine. I know this is a toughie, but you know where I'm going here. Is Obama in any way, it seems like he's pulling us out of a lot of things in the world. So, go ahead.
I would say, unfortunately, he's not pulling us out of a lot of things in the world. He's been belligerent. He's been, I don't think he rises to the level of being worthy of the word doctrine, for better or worse, because there isn't enough that distinguishes him from George W. Bush. They were both military interventionists. They both started and or escalated wars. They both have increased and have given every indication they will continue to increase military spending. They both assert that we have some special role in the world, that that we should be asserting our influence beyond merely defending our country and promoting free trade between our country and others. So Obama, what he has been is a grave disappointment to the people who were tired of war under George W. Bush and were hoping for a real peace candidate, someone who voted against the Iraqi war. But then he created instigated a surge in Afghanistan, much like George W. Bush's surge in Iraq, which was scorned by those who are against military intervention in the United States. So he's been pretty indistinct compared with Bush and Clinton and a whole host of presidents throughout the last century who have been highly interventionist. So he's a tremendous disappointment to the so-called progressives, liberals, and peace lovers who thought we would see a real change. But we have not. And his announcement just a few weeks ago, which came through, I believe, one of his spokespersons at the White House, indicated that military spending is going to continue to go up. And in contrast, our Libertarian Party candidates, many of them have taken a pledge to cut military spending by at least 60%, to end the wars in the Middle East, bring our troops home, and to close all our foreign military bases. There's 700 or 800 of them around the world in over 130 countries. Keep the military defense, but get rid of the military offense. Now, if we cut military spending by 60%, we will still have a military that is larger than both China's and Russia's combined, and far larger than any others in the world. So it's too big. It's way too big. And Obama wants to make it even bigger. He is in bed with a military-industrial complex in this town and happy to hand out favors and keep military spending high. That is wrong. Not only is it bad for our relationships with other countries and people of the world, it's very bad for taxpayers and for future generations who are liable for this government debt that keeps growing bigger and bigger and bigger with every president who jacks up military spending. And Obama's just one more.
Now, you know, the other side of that argument is that if we pulled everybody out from all over the world, we would destabilize the world. What do you say to that when, you know, for instance, in Korea or our bases out in, you know, in the islands out near Japan and the and Asia and the like? If we pull all of those people out all at once, do you think that this would not be a problem in terms of destabilization?
Well, there's different approaches we can take as far as the timing of it. And many would say we want to give a warning. And certainly that would be happening as our candidates campaign on cutting military spending and closing bases. The more traction they get, the more it's covered in the news that these candidates are doing well, their poll numbers are going up. It's going to be visible to the world that there's a movement happening in the United States to cut military spending. Now, we still need to really get enough immediate attention that our poll numbers go up higher and higher, eventually get elected, eventually get enough people in the Congress, or force the people who are already there to change their policies, which is another benefit of voting libertarian. We don't have to be elected to win. We can affect government policy just by doing well, because the Democrats and Republicans in power see the writing on the wall, and they realize that they're going to at risk of losing their next re-election, they're going to back down on these things. So there'll be plenty of time and plenty of warning coming as we get closer to having elected officials who are really adopting these policies. I mean, this is what happened with the war on marijuana. We still don't have any libertarians elected to the federal government, but we've been advocating that the war on drugs has been an abysmal failure. It's done much more damage than good. Ever since the party was formed, almost 44 years ago, 43 years ago. And we still don't have any members in Congress, but they actually took a vote to end the raids on medical marijuana dispensaries in the House in the last week. An amazing development. And it's not only the Libertarian Party. Credit goes also to MPP and Normal and a lot of other groups who've been working for years and running ballot initiatives in states to end the war on marijuana. Libertarians were often part of those initiatives and very much some of the workers on the ground and activists and leaders in those movements. But now what we're finding is Democrats and Republicans are finally giving up this failed war on drugs and agreeing that, yeah, and they're cutting back on mandatory minimums, on crack cocaine, another failed program. So the more people vote Libertarian, the more we change policy. And so as we move in that direction, as our campaigns get bigger and better known, we're going to be sending out a signal to the world that the American people, they're already very much with us. They want less military intervention. They want a smaller military. They do not want, they didn't want the war in Iraq. They didn't want the war in Afghanistan. They might have wanted to get Osama bin Laden, but they didn't want a 10-year war or 13-year war, 12-year war, whatever, in Afghanistan. That is not what the American people want. But they have been too much in the habit of voting Democrat and Republican and letting them get away with it. The more we vote Libertarian, the more we say to our incumbent politicians and to the world, not acceptable, you better change it or else.
We've been talking with Carla Howell, and as you can see, she certainly is on her game. She's the political director of the Libertarian Party in Washington. Carla, finally, people that want to become involved with your national convention, which will be in Columbus, Ohio, do you want to go ahead and promote that for the end here?
Sure, thank you. Just go to our website, lp.org. That's the Libertarian Party, lp.org.
And
click on the icon right at the top of the page. It says convention. You can go there. You can register. There's a variety of different packages you can buy depending on how many speakers you want to hear speak, as well as, you know, be on the convention floor, seeing the action with bylaws, platform, and elections of our officers and committee members. All kinds of events going on, all kinds of interesting speakers. It's going to be a very exciting event. I encourage anyone who's thinking about it, who can get to Columbus, Ohio, June 26th to 29th, to come. You may also, if you can't come to the convention, simply join the Libertarian Party and get plugged in to all the great activists in your area and the events going on and the campaigns, and get involved to whatever degree works for you in your life.
Wonderful, Carla. Thank you so much for your time. Really enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you so much for having me on. Have a great day.
You too, Carla. Carla Howell from the Libertarian Party. Let's take our break. Don't forget, are you a psychopath? If so, we got the jobs for you, so don't go away.
Imus in the morning.
News and Dagan Mandel is off, but her sister, Megan, has been gracious enough to come in, and she doesn't know. There she is now. Megan Mandel. Good morning, Megan.
Morning, sir. So, you know, I don't know if I'm even allowed to be here.
Yeah.
I made a contribution to a political campaign.
Oh, you did?
Otis Spurlow, he's the bouncer at the club I dance at. He ran for city council, so I gave him $60, hoping he'd change the zoning where my trailer park is so I could open a pedicure salon in my shed. I also gave him something else for an incentive, but it wasn't the kind of thing you could declare in any form.
You don't look to me like the kind of woman who would be, well, I don't know.
Like what?
Would be dancing.
Why?
Hanging off a pole.
Because I'm a plus size?
Well,
I have an eating disorder, okay?
Yeah.
I go to a restaurant, I eat this order and that order and your order and his order.
Yeah.
Hey, can I ask you a question?
Say, do you know Dagan's husband, Rollo?
Honey, the minute that marriage goes south, I am all over that like sawmill gravy on a biscuit.
Did you know her other husband?
No.
Oh, you didn't?
I did him, though, but I don't know him.
It didn't last very long, did it?
Well, no, he took about 45 seconds.
No. I mean the marriage between Dagan and her first husband.
Oh, I don't know. I wasn't invited.
Oh, I see. So, does Dagan know that you had relations with him?
She was there. She was working the camera.
Catch Imus in the Morning right here on the stations of the Tantalk Network.
Oh, my goodness. Imus in the Morning. Lee Clark pulls some of these bits out, and I have to admit, they are funny. Thank you, Lee. Get my laugh for the day every time we bring those little tidbits on. How long ago was that one, do you think?
It's a few years back.
Was it a few years ago?
Yeah.
Wow. Could have been yesterday.
Pulled from the archives.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, anyway, what is Monday through Friday, 6 to 9? Is that right for the Imus in the Morning?
Yeah, and then when you're not here, Tuesday and Thursday. It's
well, there you go.
At 10 o'clock.
Fair. Exactly. Well, lots to talk about. We did billboard this next story. Doctor shortages. A very scary situation is developing. Now, last week, there was a report that about 1,700 veterans who wanted to see a doctor in Phoenix at a Veteran Affairs hospital there were missing from an official waiting list, a tactic that is being used, apparently, at other veterans' facilities. But America itself is running out of doctors, and this situation that's going on at the Veterans Affairs offices with people waiting and waiting and waiting, veterans waiting to be treated, is something that may be on the horizon for the rest of us. America is running out of doctors. The country will be about 92,000 doctors short of what it needs to treat people in 6 years. 92,000 doctors short. Now, that's according to the Association of American Medical Colleges. By 2025, we're going to be short 131,000 doctors. So who are going to treat all of the people that need help? So this is a kind of scary deal. And the question is Obamacare enhancing it? And my answer would be yes, indeed, because the regulations, when the federal government starts to take over any kind of a private industry situation, as they have done over the years with healthcare, it's Healthcare is just as much a product that works in the private sector as anything else, whether it be food, clothing, shelter. All of those are private sector. And when you take any one of them and you pull it into the government, you can be guaranteed you're going to have shortages. Shortages in equipment, shortages in doctors. And everybody suffers. And this is what's happening when you have government taking over more control of our government, of our hospitals, of our doctors' clinics, and all of the regulations that they assess. So when I read stories like this, that we're going to be about 92,000 doctors short in 4 years, in 6 years, it is something that I think is quite clear. Now, I've talked about this before. We've talked about it before. Nurse practitioners, and they're already coming into play. I myself was, when I went to see a doctor, I was actually treated by a nurse practitioner. And that's the kind of thing you're getting. Now, they are good. And the one that I had was extremely good. But you're not getting a doctor. And a doctor has more training. And that's just the way things are. So this is why, in the face of all of these new government regulations, which are disincentives for people to come into the profession, we suffer because of shortages in those in the people means that we are not going to be able to see the people that we want to see, and this is an indication of it, at least according to the American Medical College Association. Well, the Democrats want to change the Constitution, and it has to do with campaign donations. Now, generally, Democrats feel that most of the highfalutin, big-spending campaign donors are going to be sending their money towards Republicans, and I think in most of the cases that is true. Democrats have been going after the Koch brothers, as an example, two very wealthy people that have been backing all kinds of Republican candidates. But the Democrats indeed have their own groups. George Soros is certainly one of the people that you can point to. And all of the unions, which are Democrats, are tremendous fundraisers for Democrats. Anyway, the Democratic-led Senate Judiciary Committee yesterday started a long-shot bid to bring up a constitutional amendment that would limit campaign donors' influence. Now, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid says that there is a free flow of what he calls shady money into politics, and he calls it a huge threat to democracy. Mitch McConnell, the Republican counterpart in the Senate to Harry Reid, says the efforts to limit campaign spending is really just a tactic by the Democrats to rile up its base for the upcoming election. Now, changing our Constitution is intentionally hard to do, and leaders from both parties acknowledge that the efforts to prohibit these high-spending super PACs very likely are not going to have any success. Reid told panel members that our involvement in government should not be dependent on our bank account balances. And Reid has been one of the foremost critics of the Koch brothers. He used his post as the Senate's top lawmaker to aggressively criticize them. And they are the poster childs, you might say, for the Democrats as they bring up this idea that rich people, like the Koch brothers, are influencing elections. Here's the problem, though, with all of that. Free speech is involved. It's a First Amendment right. And to say that you've got to limit free speech by limiting spending, or I should put it the other way, if you limit spending, you actually do limit the speech of people that want to say things or do things. And it is an impossibility, in my opinion, to be able to put a dollar amount as a maximum. There just is no way that you can do that. The best thing to do is to allow everybody the opportunity. And when groups come together, people come together as groups because they share a particular agenda, a political or a philosophical agenda. They have the right to pool their money, and they have the right to invest it in furthering their cause. That is the American way, and that is indeed part of our free speech. Anyway, let us do this. We're going to take our break, and when we come back, we promise you we're going to talk a little bit about psychopaths and what kind of work they like to do. Also, should you be forced to bake wedding cakes for gay people if you don't want to? We'll talk about that.
Imus in the morning.
Please welcome to the Imus Morning Program, Larry King. So, good morning, Mr. King.
Morning, Soupy.
Idiot.
Herman Cain allegedly had an affair with a woman for 13 years, which is not all that different from allegations of sexual harassment, except this woman was actually into it. Herman, of course, is denying the accusation, saying she's only a friend, which to me means she let you hide the ferret and then call her own cab. I think the kids today call that a friend with benefits. Years ago, that used to mean a lady you knew had major medical and a 401k. These days, it means she's willing to let you dip your stinger in the honey hive, go Dutch on dinner, and not stay the night.
Hey.
If you ask me, to paraphrase Elton John and Dionne Warwick, that's what friends are for. The only thing that would really put it over the top would be if she let you borrow money. But I've never been lucky enough to have those kinds of friends. Oh, we'd start out that way, catch a hockey game together, then ice the puck out in the parking lot after the third period. But then she inevitably would want me to put a ring on it, which usually meant one on her finger and one through my nose. Moose Knuckle, Kentucky, when you do it with a fat chick and her belly slaps against her breasts, does it actually sound like she's giving you a round of applause? Your thoughts?
What? God almighty. I mean,
catch Imus in the Morning right here on the stations of the Tantalk Network.
You know, sometimes when we come out of those commercials, I feel like I have to go wash my hands.
Yeah, take a shower.
They are funny, however.
That is really.
How long ago was that one? How old is that?
I don't know.
That clip.
You know,
we say that because Lee Clark edits these things, and he's got a library. Lee Clark's got a library of these things. And I tell you what, we could just spend an entire day playing these things back to back and just laugh our heads off because they are.
That's. I think we're hitting new lows.
We are hitting new lows, but they are funny. You have to admit they are funny. Well, I found this story to be very interesting. There is a baker. Do you remember this? He didn't want to make a wedding cake for a gay couple.
I remember.
Yeah. And, well, listen to what's happened
to him.
Would
he put two little guys on the top of the
Yeah,
cake?
You would have.
Two guys?
Absolutely. Yeah, that was part of it, okay. I think. Yeah. And it's a family-owned bakery. And this is in Colorado, Lakewood, Colorado area. He has been ordered to make wedding cakes for gay couples. And he and his staff must undergo comprehensive sensitivity training.
Well, obviously he has some sort of mental issue.
Apparently, according to the state's Civil Rights Commission, he must do this.
Bakers make the psychopath top 10 list?
You know, that's a good question. We're going to find that out in just a few minutes, and I think they might have. Now that I'm looking at
maybe they're number 11 or something.
But, you know, or you got to admit the people in the food industry can be a little weird.
Very weird.
So I bet you.
Why I don't eat at restaurants anymore. You just never know.
You never know what's going on in the kitchen.
No.
You just don't know if a guy's going to come running out of there screaming with a meat cleaver in his hand.
Yeah.
I mean, you just never know. Anyway, we're going to get to that in a little while. But in the meantime, this guy is a Christian. He owns a bakery. He's owned it for a long time. His name is Jack Phillips. It's Masterpiece Cake Shop. It's in Lakewood, Colorado. And he's been directed to change his store policies immediately and force his staff to attend sensitivity sessions. For the next 2 years, he will also be required to submit quarterly reports to the Civil Rights Commission to confirm that he has not turned away customers based on their sexual orientation. Now, I don't know about you, but if I owned a store for 27 years and somebody came up with some regulation like this, it could not go into the wastebasket quickly enough. In fact, I would have a camera there as I ripped the thing up and threw it into the waste, and then set the wastebasket on fire, by the way.
Yeah, this is like reaching new levels of
insanity. Can you believe, and I would say to them, look, you can say any damn thing you want about this. I'm not going to do it. I will bake my cake for whoever I want to bake my cake. And I will not bake a cake if I knew you were coming. I might not bake a cake because it's up to me. If I want to bake a cake, I will bake a cake. And if I don't want to bake a cake, I won't bake a cake. And I won't bake cookies.
Probably.
And I won't bake candies.
Probably a constitutional amendment, you know.
So
you don't have to bake cakes for people you don't want to bake cakes.
Exactly.
You know?
I mean,
come on.
There is that fine line. Let's be honest. There is a fine line. People come in and you say, I'm not going to serve you because for whatever reason. It has to do with you're Jewish, you're black, you're Christian, you're Muslim, you're gay, you're not gay.
I don't like your motorcycle.
Yeah, I don't like the motorcycle, and I wish you wouldn't ride it in here. But can you or can you not refuse service? My answer, with all respect, is yes, you can refuse service. If it's your private company, you can refuse service. If it's a public company, that's a different story. If it's a private company and you own it, I think you have a right. I think it's a free speech right. So, Phillips, the guy that owns this store, Jack Phillips, by the way, he's celebrating his 40th year in the bakery business. That's amazing. He said he's not going to create any new policies. They're not going to go to the sensitivity training. And he's going to bake a cake for anybody that he wants. He says, basically, my old policies are pretty adequate as far as I'm concerned. I don't plan on giving up my faith and changing because of that. And I say to you, Mr. Yeah. Phillips, God bless you,
good for you
and good for you. That is freedom indeed.
When you're sitting in the pokey, you know, and you say, you ask the guy next to you, you know, what are you in for? Oh, I murdered my wife, you know. Oh, wow. So what are you in for? I refuse to bake a cake.
Yeah, I
didn't want to bake a cake.
I didn't bake a cake.
Yeah, refusing to bake a cake. It is wild.
Yeah, yeah.
Stay away from that guy, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, he's dangerous.
Right? Uh-huh. I mean, how are they going to enforce this, the Civil Rights Commission in Colorado, when he says, I'm not going to bake the damn cake? What are they going to do?
I don't know.
Are they going to send stormtroopers over there? Surround the place?
SWAT team helicopters and tanks and stuff?
Yeah.
And
I don't think so.
They should bake a bunch of pies and...
Exactly,
you know,
and have a huge pie fight.
In their face.
Now, that would be a good way to settle this dispute.
Yes. Absolutely.
We line up the Civil Rights Commission with on one side and the employees with bakery on another. They both have an equal number of pies.
You can officiate. Okay.
I think that would be
Gentlemen,
the perfect way to do it.
Start your pies.
Start your pies.
Shut
there
your pie
you go. Off. Well, here is something I find. This has to do with Canada and climate change. Now, you would think Canada typically...
Some serious global warming.
You would think that they would be global warming enthusiasts, right?
Yeah, one would hope.
Well, I said this wrong, but, you know, they Canadians tend to be...
pro-global warming.
Yeah, yeah.
Please, warm this.
Well, they do want a warmer there. That's true. I didn't think of that. But in Canada, if you are a meteorologist... And you start to talk about climate change on the air, you can be censured by the government of Canada, no matter if you're working at a local station or not. The government has made it clear that none of the meteorologists, at least on its own payroll, should talk about climate change. Now, a lot of these people on the government payroll would be positive in terms of saying that there is a global warming problem and we have to be doing something about it. But the government of Canada does not want them talking about it. Here is a spokesman for Environment Canada, a government operation. Our weather preparedness meteorologists are experts in the field of severe weather and speak to this subject. The questions about climate change or long-term trends would be directed to a climatologist or other applicable authority. So, in a way, they are muzzling their own meteorologists. Now, I don't think that's right. I think if a meteorologist wants to talk about it, I think he should have every right, one way or the other, to talk about it. You know, again, it's kind of a free speech issue. And you would think that Canada in particular would be a little more sensitive to that. I say the government, not Canada, but the government of Canada. But apparently that is not, because they, you know, the Canadian government has a reputation for being somewhat progressive, usually. More progressive than we are.
I'm all for climate change.
Yeah, in fact, it changes anyway, even if you're not for it. Yeah. I mean, it's always I mean, climate change is such a dubious term. Climate, yeah, we're going to have climate change. The question is how much of it is man-made. I'm not so sure man has that much to do with it. I think we give ourselves too much credit for climate change. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Anyway, as you are, it's time, I think, for one of our most important top tens and most interesting top tens. These are the top 10 jobs chosen by psychopaths. And I got to credit Lee Clark. Because Lee Clark, Lee, do you mind
if I ran across.
Lee Clark was the one that ran across this. Now, my first question to Lee is, why? How did you run across it?
Well,
it gives you an indication of what Lee Clark's interests are. That's what all I have to say.
Well, you know, I mean, I like to contribute every now and then. But I like to contribute where I can.
I think this is terrific. This is a ranking compiled by Oxford psychologist Kevin Dutton. Who, by the way, is the author of The Wisdom of Psychopaths. Ah, now that in alone is worth reading.
Did authors
I wanna read
make
it.
The list? I don't think authors made the list.
So here we go, my friends. Are we ready? Because this is the top 10 jobs.
We got our psychopath and drummer.
Somehow he's figured it out that psychopaths would choose. Number 10. A civil servant in the government. A civil servant. I can agree with that. I think a lot of psychopaths would gravitate towards the government.
So we get paid for doing squat.
Yeah, exactly. Number 9. And Lee, you were right. A food industry.
No kidding.
A chef. A chef is ranked number 9.
I forgot. I have not reviewed this list.
I was going to say, I'm surprised you're surprised. But and I am not surprised.
That's scary.
I'm not surprised. I have known some chefs, and I am not kidding. They march to a different drummer. No question about it. Chefs are different. Number 8. A clergyman.
How scary is that?
Is that scary or not? But psychopaths.
Last time I go to confession.
Psychopaths gravitate towards religion and the clergy.
It's a cake job, man.
Goodness.
I mean,
I never thought of that.
What do they do all week? You know.
I guess you're right. Number 7. Police officer.
How scary is this?
But the people that are policemen are just a step away from that thin blue line.
Well, it's like they say. They're what do they say about?
You're only a step away.
It's just a criminal with a badge.
A criminal with a badge. That's very true. Number 6. This is getting closer to home. A journalist.
Ew.
A journalist is a good profession for a psychopath.
Well. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. That's what it says right here. A journalist. So
this is better than I remember.
I know. Number 5. A surgeon. Ooh, that is scary. Oh, God. I just think of it. A surgeon. Well, would you like to go into surgery knowing that?
Well, I mean, what kind of guy wants to take a scalp and start cutting people apart? Cutting into you.
Well, you know, that's a good point.
Where'd you get a
You do have to have a little bit of that mentality in you. I take it back.
That's
maybe
crazy.
Psychopaths perhaps make the best surgeons. Number 4.
Sorry.
A salesman. A salesman is the 4th highest. A salesman.
Well, yeah, because, I mean.
I guess because you have to be a little bit nutty and sadistic and even masochistic to be a salesman, because rejection is 80% of your job. Rejection.
And then can you really be 100% honest when you're a salesman?
I think it's very hard. Very, very hard.
Yeah.
Here we go. Number 3.
Number 3. This deserves special something.
Number 3? Okay.
Yeah, don't you think?
Give us the special treatment.
Well, okay. I was going to play the trumpets a little bit here. So, okay, Paul, this is number 3, right?
I don't know why number 3 gets this much attention. But we're giving number 3. Number 3 is media. TV and radio people are psychopathic.
So,
third most sought after job by psychopaths is TV and radio. So, journalist is 6, TV radio is 3. My goodness.
Is it any wonder I'm losing my sanity?
You're losing yours. My sanity left me years ago. I guess that's what they say about this is true. The next one, however, you and I will both agree on. Number two, lawyers. Lawyers are the second most sought after job by psychopaths.
How crazy is that?
Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that wonderful to have a psychopath discerning the law? And finally,
here we go.
The number one job chosen by psychopaths. Chief executive officer.
Corporate CEO.
Corporate CEO is the number one job sought by a psychopath. Need we say more? I don't think so. Freedom works. Have a wonderful day. We'll be back with you again Friday.
WTAN Clearwater, Tampa Bay. WDCF Dade City, Tampa Bay. WZHR Zephyr Hills, Tampa Bay. Listen.